Shortly after daybreak...
Bam! Wake up! Wake up!
What's up, Churchill? Have you been attacked?
Put on your clothes, Bayham. We've no time to lose. We've taken the ship and Captain Bligh is our prisoner.
They've mutinied, Bayham.
Yes, Stuart, I just learned.
Good God, Churchill, are you mad? Have you any conception of what you're doing? Mutiny?
Bligh brought all this on himself. Now we'll make him suffer.
We're going to shoot the dog, and don't either of you try any of your gentlemen's tricks or we'll murder you.
Hold your tongue and mind the arms, Chess Thompson. Quindle, you stand guard there by the door.
Mr. Churchill, sir, please stop. Allow me to speak to you.
Get back, you swine, or I'll run you through.
Give him the boot, Quintal. Now you two, Stuart and Bayham, get up on deck and make it fast.
When we reached the deck, I saw quickly enough that the mutineers were far greater in number than we had suspected. Stuart and I had taken for granted that Churchill was the ringleader. But when we saw Captain Bligh tied to the mast, it was Stuart who first realized the real truth.
Christian, he's in with them. Then there's no hope.
You mutinous dogs tie me up like this. I'll see you hung. I'll have you flogged to ribbons. Do you hear me, Mr. Christian?
Hold your tongue. I'm master of this ship now.
Slit his throat.
I feed him to the sharks.
You old villain, you'll stop our grog, will you? You'll make us eat grass, will you? You and Samuel, you're both a couple of thieves.
Give it to him, Tommy.
They're on that knife through him, Ellison.
It was touch and go for a while, whether the men would murder Bligh or not. Finally, it was decided to put Bligh and his men into the Bounty launch and set it adrift.
We'll be generous. We'll start them off with enough to eat.
Yeah, let's see if Bligh can live on half a pound of yams a day.
Samuel, get in the launch.
Please, Mr. Christian, for the last time, I beg you to reflect. Consider my wife and family.
You should have thought of your family long before this, Samuel. Get in the boat, sir.
The next into the launch were Hallett and Hayward, midshipmen. They were forced to go with Bligh, for the mutineers remembered the many mean tricks each one had performed during the voyage.
Please let me stay with you, Mr. Christian.
I'll work for you, Mr. Christian. Only don't put me in that boat. It'll never make shore.
Get into the boat, the pair of you. We don't need you here. Bayham?
Yes, Mr. Christian.
You and Nelson may stay with the ship if you choose.
I shall go with Captain Bligh.
And I will too, Mr. Christian. We have no love lost for Captain Bligh, but we cannot countenance mutiny. May we go below and get our clothes, sir?
I'm sorry to see you go, but yes, of course.
As I was packing my clothes, Morrison came by on his way to join Bligh's party. An idea occurred to me. It was a desperate chance, but Morrison agreed it was worth a try. We hoped to surprise Thompson and get control of the arms chest. Perhaps it would have worked, but suddenly we heard a group of men approaching. The odds were too great since there were only two of us. Moments later, fate had an even nastier shock in store. For when I rushed up on deck, I saw that the launch had already been set adrift.
You're too late, Bayham. You can't go.
Can't go? But I will go.
Ahoy there, Captain Bligh!
There is no room for any more of you lads who wanted to come. But I'll do you justice if we ever reach England.
Within half an hour, the launch became a speck on the horizon. And then it vanished as if swallowed up by the sea. Christian addressed those of us who had had no part in the mutiny.
You men had no choice in remaining or leaving. So as long as you help run the ship, you'll receive every consideration. All right, Bayham?
We have no alternative, Mr. Christian, than to follow your orders. During the days that lay ahead, there could not have been a man lonelier than Fletcher Christian. He paced the deck hour after hour, day after day. One evening, he sent for me and explained how the mutiny had come about.
I had actually decided to desert the ship alone. Then, as though they had been spoken, I heard the words, "Seize the ship!" From that moment, my brain worked with utmost clearness and precision. All worked perfectly, and in a matter of just 5 minutes, I had my men together and armed. And Bligh was our prisoner. The rest, you know.
And that was the story of the unpremeditated mutiny. We cruised for a month in search of a landing until we were at our nerves' end. Then we came upon Tupuai. At first, our reception from the natives was friendly. We intended to buy land and settle there. Christian directed us to haul the Bounty up on land and build a fort around it. It was well that we took such great care of the Bounty, because before long, the natives became hostile toward us, and it was necessary for us to sail away again in search of another land. We decided to go back to Tahiti. I shall never forget the sight of that beautiful palm-fringed island. It was like a homecoming, returning to Hiti Hiti's house. and I saw the joy with which Christian greeted his beloved Maya Miti. Stuart was also returning to his sweetheart. They were planning on making this island paradise their home after their marriage. Christian and Maya Miti, on the other hand, chose to find another island, one that would be their own, and some of the men went with them on the Bounty. Farewell, Christian. The first of us to reach England will see your father and mother.
God bless you, and goodbye.
One morning, about 10 days after the Bounty's departure, I set out alone on a walk, pondering our strange fate. I strode inland to where the land formed a cove that met the clear, cool river in which I loved to swim. Suddenly, I perceived a lovely young girl. You are Tehani. Some time ago, I saw you dancing at Tetiaroa.
And you are Bayan, the Tayo of Hitihiti. Did I dance well?
So beautifully, I have never forgotten that night.
You are flattering me.
I said to Hitihiti, who is that girl, lovelier than the goddess of the dance herself?
You flatter me again. Come, let us see which of us can swim the farther underwater.
Tehani dived so smoothly that she scarcely rippled the water. After what seemed an endless time, she called to me.
Now it is your turn!
I began to swim downstream, determined that no girl should beat me. Tehani, you mean you swam that far? Farther than I did?
I have not cheated.
It was not long before I told Hitihiti that I was in love with Tehani and she loved me. He promised to speak to her uncle, the great chief. All formalities were soon completed, and Tehani and I were betrothed. My wedding gift to Tehani was a gold necklace I had purchased in London so long ago. The years 1790 and 1791 were the happiest of my life. Tehani and I were married in a native ceremony, and a year later, there came little Tehani, just as beautiful as her mother. I also gave the child my mother's name, Helen. My happiness was complete. My friend Stuart and his wife and child were also a happy family. Morrison and the carpenters, Norman and McIntosh, were building a boat, without tools, but seaworthy nevertheless. There were tragedies, too, during that time. In a fit of madness, Thompson shot Churchill and was himself killed by the Indians. Then, early one morning in the middle of March, 1791, I was awakened by Tuahu, Tehani's brother.
Baya, wake up! A ship! A ship!
All day, Stuart and I watched the ship approaching, until we could tell for certain that it was an English frigate.
But what of our wives and children, Baya? I never thought we would ever have to go to England again.
I don't know, Stuart. I feel the same as you do.
I feel sorry for poor Morrison. He sailed his ship away only 4 days ago. He might have saved himself the trouble and the danger.
The ship, the Pandora, was a frigate of 24 guns. I set out for her at once with Tehani's brother. My heart leaped when I saw the English colors. A lieutenant greeted us aboard ship. Because of my deep tan, he took me for a Tahitian and gave us a welcome reception. You may address us in English, sir. I am Roger Byam, late midshipman of His Majesty's ship, Bounty.
Guards!
Well, just a minute, sir. What do you need?
Take this man to Captain Edwards.
Please, sir, let me speak.
Captain Edwards, sir, here's one of the pirates.
That is not so.
Silence, you scoundrel. Mr. Hayward, you were on the Bounty. Do you know this man?
Yes, sir. He is Roger Byam, a former midshipman.
I am free of guilt in that affair, as any member of your own ship's company.
Do you dare deny you plotted with Christian to seize the Bounty? You may be interested to know that Captain Bligh, who reached England safely, has told a different story. Now, Mr. Byam, where is Fletcher Christian?
I do not know, sir.
Lieutenant Perkins, put this man in irons and scour the island for the rest of his kind. We'll get to the bottom of this, never fear.
Sir, come along, you!
Within the next 4 days, Stuart, Coleman, and Skinner were also arrested.
Tie in these dogs up well and don't bother to make them too comfortable.
On the fifth morning, I was taken to the cabin of Dr. Hamilton, the Pandora's surgeon. He was the only kind person I had found during this whole heartbreaking ordeal. At his request, I poured out my story of the mutiny.
Unfortunately, Byam, Bligh overheard you tell Christian he could count on you. There's but one person who can help you, and that is Tinkler, who overheard the conversation and would know what it was really about.
I am sure Tinkler will clear my name, Dr. Hamilton.
I am sure he can. Now, another thing. Sir Joseph Banks has asked me to inquire about a certain dictionary, and also to give you this letter, if you were found.
It was a letter from my mother that I recall word for word to this day. A letter of complete faith in my innocence. With it, she had enclosed a cruel and heartless message written to her by Captain Bligh, calling my actions on the Bounty baseness beyond description. My most unhappy moment was still to come. I was allowed only a few minutes to bid Tehani farewell.
I have no time for weeping. I must speak quickly. There are 300 men, the best warriors, waiting to free you.
No, my darling, you must not. It would mean only death. We are chained hand and foot, and Captain Edwards is expecting an attack. Now, just let me hold you and our little one. As I kissed my wife goodbye and held my child in my arms for the last time, I tasted to the full the bitterness of true misery. Shortly after my parting with Tehani, we were transferred to a structure built on deck. Not long after we sailed, Morrison's boat was overtaken. With him were Ellison, Millward, Burkitt, Hillbrand, Skinner, Norman, Muspratt, and Burns. It made a very crowded prison indeed. During the next 2 months, the Pandora sailed about the islands in search of the Bounty. We in the prison sweltered in the heat of the sun, or tumbled about until our wrists and ankles were raw from the pitching of the ship in bad weather. Then, when we reached the Great Barrier Reef on the coast of Australia, the Pandora met her doom. Above the roar of the waves, dashing the Pandora against the rocks, we could hear. But there was no order to unshackle the prisoners. It was cruel of Captain Edwards to leave us to die like trapped rats. Had it not been for the boatswain's mate, who came back to free us, we would have all been drowned. Clutching my dictionary to me in a waterproof bag, I sprang into the sea. I saw a spar fall and strike Stewart, but I was powerless to help him. I knew I had lost the best companion a man ever had. Eventually, the ship's small boats picked up many of us, and we made our way to a barren island where we blistered in the heat of the relentless sun. 33 of the ship's company and 4 prisoners had been lost. After days of suffering,
we're going to set out for Timor. But as captain of this ship, I wish to remind you prisoners that we have not forgotten you are pirates and mutineers. You are on the way to the punishment you deserve.
In the small boats of the Pandora, we made the weary, heartbreaking trip to Timor, more than 1,000 miles away. There we were transferred to a Dutch vessel, and later on to an English ship. On June 19th, 1792, we anchored in Portsmouth Harbor after an absence of 4.5 years, 15 months of which had been spent in irons. We prisoners were placed aboard the Hector. A few days after our arrival, Sir Joseph Banks came to see me. He brought with him a Mr. Graham, an Admiralty lawyer. My first shock was to learn from Sir Joseph of my mother's death. I told Sir Joseph and Mr. Graham my story of the mutiny in detail, and that Tinkler was the only one who could clear me. Sir Joseph promised to begin a search for him at once. I spent the anxious days of waiting by working on my manuscript. At last, a letter arrived from Sir Joseph.
My dear Byam, I have learned that Tinkler was lost aboard the Carib Maid in a hurricane near Cuba. It would be useless for me to deny that this is a great misfortune.
At last, the court-martial began aboard the Duke. Many of those who had sailed with Bligh testified in my behalf, but Thomas Heywood did me irreparable harm.
I was aboard the Bounty, and I say that I believe there is no question that Byam assisted the mutineers.
On the 18th of October, 1792.
Having heard the evidence against you, and having heard what you have said in your defense, this court is of the opinion that the charges have been proved. It doth therefore judge that you, Roger Byam, Thomas Burkitt, John Millward, and you, Thomas Ellison, shall be hanged by the neck until you are dead.
We were all condemned men, only awaiting the noose. But for some reason, which we did not understand then, our execution was delayed for several days. And in those few days, by a miracle, Sir Joseph had succeeded in finding Tinkler.
Are you there? Getting off the ship. Tinkler!
What? Who?
Mr. Tinkler, I am Sir Joseph Banks. I just learned that you were not lost at sea. Word came to me of your arrival on this ship. Oh, come with me at once. It's a matter of greatest importance. I have a coach waiting to take us to Portsmouth. Hurry, lad! Faster, faster!
Tinkler had been found alive just in the nick of time. His testimony as to what Christian and I really said saved my life. And pardons came through for Muspratt and Morrison as well. As to the other three prisoners, while we were rowing ashore, a gun boomed. We did not need to turn our heads to know that they had just been hanged. Tinkler, if you hadn't been saved off Cuba, I too would be at the end of a rope. Man, I owe you a lot.
None of us will ever forget the Bounty, will we, sir?
Shortly thereafter, I visited Sir Joseph Banks. We spent a pleasant evening discussing my dictionary. Then...
Byam, what are your plans? Shall you return to the Navy or go up to Oxford?
Neither, sir. I shall return to the South Seas, to Tahiti.
You can't, Byam. You have been imprisoned and tried for mutiny. That you were acquitted is not enough. You must clear your family name beyond all shadow of a doubt. Think it over, lad, and let me know.
If I may speak plainly, sir, I am innocent and the devil with public opinion. I returned to Widdicombe after going to Cumberland to visit Christian's parents, as I had promised him to do. Of that interview, I shall not speak. In the month I stayed at home, I pondered over what Sir Joseph had said to me the last time we met. I took my pen in hand. My dear Sir Joseph, after due consideration, I have decided to enter His Majesty's Navy. I joined the Hector in January 1793. This was the very ship on which I had been held while awaiting my court-martial and execution. I hoped my duties might somehow take me to Tahiti, but I was doomed to delays and disappointments. Hostilities broke out the following month, the stormiest time in British naval history, and so the years passed. After the Battle of Trafalgar, I was promoted to the rank of captain. It was not until April of 1810 that my dream of returning to Tahiti was realized. At last we lay anchored off the beautiful island which had become so much a part of me. I reached the shore and it was quiet, far more quiet than I had ever seen it. It seemed to be inhabited by ghosts rather than people. Only the river was unchanged. The river and a dream. There was no sign of Hitihiti's house, where I had lived so happily, or of Stewart's either. Wars and diseases brought by European ships had taken their toll. I went to the other side of the island. Everything I remembered was gone. Then, suddenly I saw Tehani's brother.
Tuahu!
Byam!
Where is Tehani? And our child?
Tehani is dead. She died when you were 3 moons gone. But the child lives. A woman now with a child of her own. You shall see her presently.
Old friend and kinsman, I wish to see my daughter, but not to make myself known to her, to tell her that I am her father, to embrace her, to speak to her of her mother would be more than I could endure. You understand? When I saw my daughter, she really was my beautiful Tehani, just as I had known her so many years before. And around her neck, she wore the necklace I had given her mother. I stood speechless with emotion, a mixture of joy and sorrow, pondering what time and circumstances had done with my life. The moon was bright when I went down to my boat, and the place was filled with ghosts, my own among them. I have been retired for 15 years. After 40 years at sea, 7 generations of Byams have lived and died here at Witticombe. It is strange to think that at my death, what remains of our blood will flow in the veins of an Indian woman in the South Seas. But I live on here with Thacker to look after me, and my journal, and my memories.